Hey, hi everyone. Welcome to American Truth Finders. I'm Neil Douglas and I'm your host for the show. Hey, we got another great show lined up for tonight. I know I say that every week, but you know what? It's true. Our topic tonight is, and I want you to be ready for this one, is federalizing police. I'm going to repeat that. Federalizing police. My guest tonight is Kenneth Abraham. And I'm going to give you just a little information about Ken, because I'm going to let, he's got a bio that's unreal. And, but Ken is also the founder and president of Citizens for Criminal Justice. And I posted this myself, so you have to blame me if you went to my website, AmericanTruthFinders.com or BBSRadio.com, that he is an activist in this field. And of course, I'll let Ken tell you more about himself. Now, remember, this is a call-in show, so please feel free to call in and ask any questions you might have. And as I always tell you, remember, no question is a dumb one. It's the ones that you're afraid of to call me. So that's the one I'm concerned about more than anything else. Is don't be afraid. And anyway, I tell you what, let's do. Let's give you our 800 number. I did post it on Facebook, by the way, and I am on Facebook, and I did message that if you want don't want to call in case you have a little stage fright, to message me on Facebook, and I will try to get the question off to Ken. But I tell you what, we definitely want questions tonight, definitely. And if you even have any responses or any more information that we have to offer, please call. Our number is, get your pencil out, folks. Come on now. And it's on Facebook, on my site, Neil Douglas, is all you have to go to, and you'll find it. It's 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. Don't forget, you're listening to BBS Radio also. If it weren't for them, we wouldn't even be on the air. So, now that I've gone through all of that, and you know that my website is AmericanTruthFinders.com, and Ken's website, if I'm not mistaken, he's going to correct me as soon as I bring him on, which is going to be about 15 seconds, is citizensforcriminaljustice.org. If that's not correct, I'm sure he's going to correct me in a real quick hurry. Ken, are you with us?
Wrong. Good evening. Hello, Neil. Hello, everybody out there. Listen, it's www.citizensforcriminaljustice.net. And I encourage everyone to check it out. There's a lot of good information, useful, practical articles on there. Thank you.
No, Ken, you're absolutely right. Because like I said, when I said .org, I apologize for that. Anyway, Ken, I brought you on for two reasons tonight, because we're going to do part one tonight, and then I'm wanting to do part two of federalizing police in our next show. But I'm going to ask you before we even get started, give me some time in the near future when you are available, that we can do a show about Citizens for Criminal Justice.
Okay. Listen, I'm looking forward to show number 10. I've got a ton of information. I have been immersed in criminal justice issues for the last 8 years. But sure, I'd be glad to do that. Thank you.
Well, great. And now, Ken, do me a favor and give our audience a favor. Because if I read it, let me tell you what, it's like a book. Because I did post it on my Facebook. And I also posted it.
Okay.
Not on Facebook, but on my website, and I also did it on the radio show. So give us a little background on you and some of your bio. Would you do that for me?
I don't want to spend the time talking about me. I really want to get into the issues. But bottom line, I grew up here in Dover, Delaware, had the world's best parents, happy childhood. I went to law school. I was a prosecutor for about 5 years in the days when the system worked well. And we'll get into that more, I hope. And then I was in private practice for about 5 years. Then I closed my law firm, moved to Florida, went into business, life fell apart. That's another long story. Came back to Delaware to take care of my dad. turn to with the pain. It's a terrible thing to say, but I have nothing to hide at this point. I give talks. I'm writing a book. It's all on my website.
Fantastic.
The pain, sorrow, and stress of dad's decline, I turned to cocaine. I lost everything to cocaine about 8 years ago. I have learned as much as humanly possible about addiction and related behavioral problems, substance abuse, et cetera, et cetera. And a whole lot about it. And I went to it worse than that. It's with no small dose of shame, embarrassment, remorse, and regret that I tell you I stole money to buy more of the poison. So I went to prison. I should have been out of prison in 1 year. They kept me there for 5 years. Some of the guards, when they saw that I was trying to get some of their buddies arrested, as they need to be, and had filed a lawsuit. So the bottom line is, I got a good look at today's criminal justice system compared to when it worked well, as I just mentioned. So it's, when I saw what goes on in prison, it got me started on everything I'm doing now, which is addressing all of the problems in the criminal justice system, and there are many. So I'm a former prosecutor, defense attorney, businessman, entrepreneur. I own my own businesses. I was a business broker in Florida for a short time, for about 4 years. I had a broker's license, but carved out a little niche selling businesses. Teacher, I've taught at local community colleges, and now I'm doing what I want with the nonprofit Citizens for Criminal Justice, which is helping an awful lot of people individually, and I do counseling at the homeless shelter in town, one of the best in the country, by the way, helping a lot of guys in reentry coming out of prison and addressing the homeless. Excuse me, I was homeless when I got out of prison, and I was so I helped those fellows with all the issues that they face.
Ken, I'm going to interrupt you for just a minute here. I got to tell you what, my hat is off to you.
Well,
and I hope that our listeners are really feeling the same way I am. You have just poured out your heart as to your life, and I'm going to tell you something. That takes a lot of courage. And I'm serious about this, because let me tell you something. You know, you said you lost everything, and I can understand that, because, you know, there are so many people probably even listening that have gone through the same thing but are afraid to discuss it.
Well, I understand. Yep.
And so I'm going to tell you right now, when we do your show, you know, about criminals for citizens justice, or citizens for criminal justice, excuse me. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Hey, you have
That's
to overlook right. me, buddy.
That's okay.
Anyway,
that's okay.
We'll get deeper into that, but by gollies, I'm going to tell you something. I want people to know, can they get your book on Amazon or any place else, or just on the site?
No, I'm still working on the book. The best they can do at this point is go to our website, www.citizensforcriminaljustice.net, and we have a Facebook group page, growing by leaps and bounds, over 7,000 members now, and check in on that periodically. There's a lot of good information and good posts on there.
Well, I'm going to tell you something. I agree with that, because I'm part of that. Matter of fact, on my website, you're under my group section on my right side. I do have your site there so that people can go to it. And I'm a part of it, because I tell you what, I admire what you're saying. I don't make comments to most anything, even on my own site on Facebook, because I don't want to get into political arguments or et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
That's not political at all. It's about the problems and solutions with the criminal justice system. You know, to address your comment, I don't look at it as courageous. I'm just trying to turn my, you know, the negative into a positive. And the way I look at it, the good Lord has just uniquely equipped me, prepared me to be doing exactly what I'm doing now. I have so much experience with a whole lot of these issues, and especially in the last 8 years, just concentrating on it day and night, pretty much. Read thousands of articles, talked to thousands of people, read thousands of books, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway.
Well, I'm going to tell you what, again, my hat's off to you. Let's move on to tonight's show. How's that?
Okay, you bet.
Federal policing, okay, we're talking about local police, county police. I'm talking about in the country.
Yeah.
Right up to state police. Otherwise, now, and then this, a lot of this became in the wake of the Baltimore riots. Remember those, of course. And Al Sharpton is the one that was calling for the takeover of local police, and he is an advisor to President Obama. Now, and, you know, like a lot of ideas from, you know, Reverend Sharpton, and I'm, you know, I've got to be to say it like it is. I think it's kind of a lousy one in my place, because since federalizing local police is actually the Obama administration idea, it's worth paying a lot more attention to. What do you think about that?
Okay, federalization of the police. Well, you know, we have federal police, the FBI, which by and large does a tremendous job. We've got the ATF, the DEA, ICE, and the immigration people. The DEA, of course, is just a world disaster. They're on a misguided mission in the first place with the so-called war on drugs, which is another issue you don't want to get me started on tonight. Just a total disaster. The cops are nothing. But the only person really, and there's several issues here when you say federalization of police, it seems to me. We have the militarization of it, you know, and I'll come to that in a moment, I hope. But there nobody, I read these articles, including the ones you sent me and perhaps 30 more. People bombard me with information, you know, since they know what I'm doing. And I get an awful lot of it across my computer every day. The only person who's really calling or suggested that was Al Sharpton. And that's not what Obama is calling for by any means. And of course, let me say, in my opinion, it's a bad idea. I'm sure that there could be some efficiencies and some productivity enhanced by consolidating some police forces. You know, for example, here in Delaware, which is where I am, it's a small state. There are three counties. And in one county, we have the city police. Wilmington is the largest city, Wilmington, Delaware. We have the city police, Wilmington Police Department. We have the county police, Newcastle County Police, and the state police, which, of course, is the state troopers with statewide jurisdiction. Now, there probably could be some efficiencies in consolidating some of that. But the idea of a national police force, like the Army, is just crazy from many perspectives, it seems to me. Number one, we've seen what they do. The federal government, they have the resources and the money to implement and promote a lot of programs, such as some things that Obama has mentioned, which people take as or categorize as federalizing the police, when he says he's going to provide funding for 50,000 body cameras, which is an excellent idea, and some training programs. There's a vast need for all that sort of thing. But we sure don't want a federal police force where people could be, you know, transferred here and there at the whim of whoever's in control of such a thing. We need local police departments, feet on the beat, feet on the ground. It's called community policing, which we lost track of decades ago when we started the war on drugs, really. We started the whole decline of the whole criminal justice system. There was an article, I recently wrote a letter to the editor. We had a program in Wilmington, Delaware, where they came up with some funds to put more cops on the streets. At least Wilmington, by the way, is one of the most violent cities in the country. I think it was Newsweek that labeled it the murder capital of America. Not quite as bad as Chicago these days, but you know, these are mothers' sons getting killed on the street corners every week. It's so tragic. So they increased the foot patrols and so forth. Well, that was a six-month trial program. During that time, I forget the statistics, but crime was greatly reduced. The funds ran out a couple of weeks ago. There has already been an uptick in crime. It was like six shootings in one weekend, that sort of thing. You know, this is not rocket science. What we need is more local police with feet on the street, talking to the citizens, conversing with the citizens, not slamming every other young black man up against a car, hoping they can find a joint in their pocket, but establishing a relationship with the community to get a feeling for what's going on and to arrest the people committing serious crimes. Stop chasing their tails, wasting time, busting nonviolent drug offenders and the mentally ill and that sort of thing.
Ken, let me ask you this question, because you're making a very good point here about, you know, there was a day when the police was your friend.
Absolutely. I told my son the policeman is
not
my parents told me, and I told my son the policeman is your friend. That is the way it should be. The police are here to protect and serve. But and here we get into it. Back to the war on drugs in the 60s and 70s when it really started getting ramped up. The World War, for one thing. not a war on drugs. It's a war on drug users. And then crept in the militarization of it, you know, with these rapid, quick response teams. I call them stormtroopers, whatever you want to call it, with all the heavy gear and body armor and shields and so forth. And with the hostile attitude of the police toward the citizenry, it's no wonder that citizens are hesitant to cooperate, you know, in terms of solving violent crimes, murders, and so forth. They view the police as the enemy, and they have become the enemy. And when we introduce all this military equipment, you know, there was a town, you know, I think it was a couple of years ago, the military started giving away all this surplus equipment, and towns applied for it, and they got it for free, and they beefed up their departments. They don't need all this crap. There was a town, I forget the name of it, population of 8,000 people, ended up with this huge armored vehicle, a tank-like vehicle, you know, but they don't need that. We've got these Humvees and armored personnel carriers. The more sinister consequence of that, not only is it a tremendous waste of money and resources, of course, but it's the effect of the mentality. You know, what are police supposed to do? They're supposed to protect and serve. What is the military supposed to do? What are soldiers supposed to do? They're trained to kill the enemy. There's a very subtle influencing of the whole nature of policing, which suggests that maybe, you know, they get too aggressive. They view themselves as too hostile. They become too hostile. We've seen it in too many instances recently. You know, the good news is there's a spotlight on out-of-control police these days. Thank God. We need to get one on prison guards next. I hope we can do a show on that someday. We will.
Yeah. Ken, you hit on two spots that I want to jump on right now.
Okay, sure.
What I want to do is I'm hoping some of our listeners will call in and ask you or tell you what's going on in their communities. First of all, the first thing you mentioned was militarization of police. Okay, now I'm glad you brought that up because that's been an issue I think that people are very concerned about because of such things as Jade Helm 15, which we now know is a fact that everybody thought was just a conspiracy, because even Governor Abbott in Texas is keeping an eye on it. And even the news items, even Fox News had an article on it. I'm just giving you an example, because what that is bringing the military into going into neighborhoods, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. They're also finding out what sheriffs are friendly and which ones are not going to be friendly to this type of thing. The second thing is I'm questioning, because we have the same thing in the area that I live, where they have got the Humvees and the military type gear, if you want to call it that. And I'm going to go back to something, to a movie, a series that probably nobody even remembers. ABC did a series that was 13 hours long called America with a K. And in that particular movie or series, the police were wearing the same type of gear. It was almost identical. So I guess what I'm trying to say to you, Ken, you've hit on some heavy thoughts here. And I'm wanting my listeners to think about this. And if you're having the same issue in your community of seeing the military vehicles or even the brutality of police, Ken, like you mentioned, things, you know, they're not the friends that we used to have.
Well, let me be the first to say I had the privilege of working with many fine police officers when I was a prosecutor. And to this day, the fact is that 90% of them do a great job. They do the right thing all the time. They're fine people. They went into policing to serve people. But there are too many bad apples. And there's this the culture of cover-up. And the problem is the lack of accountability. They do what they do, the bad ones, and keep getting away with it. There's the hesitancy and reluctance to turn them in of their fellow police officers. They should be the first to turn them in. They're an insult and a disgrace to the many fine officers who are doing the right thing. They're a disgrace to the country. They're a disgrace to law enforcement. And they're out of control. But the problem is, and has been, today it's changing slowly, thank God, but surely. Same thing with the prison abuse, lack of accountability. The only thing that will correct the situation of police out of control is prosecuting them, convicting them, and imprisoning a few of them. That will get the message across. You see, when civilians sue, the the police or prison guards, for example, even if they win, which is one in more than 10,000, the odds are very slim. But even if you sue for abuse and you win and you get a money award, the government agency pays that, not the individual officers. So they don't feel a thing. They're not punished. They just keep doing what they're doing. Oh, well, it's a drop in the bucket to the government budgets who are paying these awards, you know, whether it's in the rare cases where they actually reach that point where somebody actually does get compensated for the harm done to them. It's a drop in the bucket. The money means nothing. And often the police unions and rules and regulations make it tremendously difficult to discipline and fire them. And then you have, of course, the internal everybody knows everybody, buddy, buddy cover-up. There should be independent investigations and prosecutions of claims of police and prison guard misconduct. I'll be the first to say that. So anyway, maybe I digressed a little bit in saying that. That's my response to some of what you just said.
No, I think you're doing great because, when you brought up federal funding or federal, you know, like suing a police officer. Okay.
Training, body cameras, that sort of thing. There should be much better training, more uniform training, comprehensive training, and required periodic training. That's every at least 5 years. I think every officer in whatever department should go back for a little training to remind them what their job is, who they serve, how to interact with the public, and their policies and procedures, et cetera, et cetera. Because they take a lot for granted. They get rusty. They're subjected to the influence of the guys who want to do the wrong thing. It's natural. In any kind of any profession, you're going to have good people, bad people. You got to keep the focus on the good ones. Keep them up front. Keep them in leadership positions, et cetera. But we need uniformity in training, consistent rules and standards. Body cameras are a great thing. I can get into that a little bit if you want to, but go ahead.
Well, no, I think you're leading to some great things here. And the fact that, yes, there are some good police officers out there. We all know that. And the ones that have overstepped their boundaries, as I would call it. The thing that bothers me, and I think it bothers many Americans, and maybe you have maybe more of an idea, is that it the brutality or the force of the police officers are almost like bullies, okay?
Yeah, absolutely. My point is simple, and that's exactly what we have with a lot of these police officers and prison guards. What's going to happen when you put somebody with a bully mentality, and Lord knows there are too many people like that, in an environment where they have absolute authority and control over somebody, and in prison especially, where that helpless victims, subject to whatever these people want to do, and they commit wrong and keep getting away with it, getting away with it, getting away with it, what are they going to do? They're going to keep doing it. You've got to hold them accountable, prosecute them, and imprison them. That's the only clear signal that we can send. And unfortunately, so many United States attorneys, that's the federal prosecutor in whatever jurisdiction you live in, and local DAs, they have their heads in the sand. They've had their heads in the sand for decades. They do not want to acknowledge these problems, and they should. It's taken a terrible toll on society. This issue, among many others, has resulted in a tremendous lack of faith and confidence in our whole criminal justice system. All across the board, we need to hold these people accountable.
And, well, Ken, that's excuse me for interrupting, but that's kind of like Washington, D.C., for crying out loud.
Yep, it is.
I mean, we've got to hold their feet to the fire and make them accountable. It's the same way in each state. We have the same thing. I mean, everything goes on in everybody's state. We all know that. But in Washington, yep, D.C., it trickles down to the state, the county, and then the cities. And I think you hit something earlier about when you said the federal government pays for a lawsuit against a police officer.
Government, the city budget pays for it. So the county budget pays for it. It's peanuts out of their budget. That doesn't mean a thing. There's no deterrent. It's not a deterrent. But this law applies to everyone. And that's been a bedrock foundation of our country. It makes us the envy of the world. The fact that we used to have a well-functioning, fair criminal justice system. And by that, I mean justice almost always was the result. And it was. In the years when I practiced law on both sides of the criminal justice system and general practice, 73 to 83, I'm telling you, it worked well. Today it is so very, very different, due primarily to the war on drugs. We can get into it all in detail. I welcome any and all questions from callers. Please start asking questions. But the law should apply to everyone. And the problem in this country has been that the officials who have the power to enforce the law, judges, oh, don't get me started on judges either. The judges who get these, you know, claims filed by people abused, they ignore the law. They misstate the facts. I've seen it hundreds and hundreds of times, primarily during my years in prison. To get rid of these cases, they don't want to acknowledge the problem. We should acknowledge the problem, address it head on, and correct it. Hold people accountable.
Well, you know something. You've touched on so many things already. I am going to give that phone number out because I do want some callers. I really do. It's our number is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And I'm going to tell you, I know that most all my shows, people don't call in because they're so intrigued by what the guest has to say. I have to say, Ken, you, like all my guests, are a great guest because I'm just saying.
We need to get people interested and excited and aware of the problem. The great problem with what goes on, so many people don't know. Never mind prison abuse, it's another separate issue. But just the whole criminal justice system. You know, I read a poll, the statistics are overwhelming any way you look at it. It's quite obvious when you look at the prison population. And every person, every black person in every black community knows it to be true that the system is racially biased tremendously. I mean, the numbers I've got coming out the wazoo, the odds of getting arrested if you're black compared to if you're white, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The numbers tell the story. And yet, a recent poll showed that 74%, nearly three-quarters of the American public, doesn't think that our criminal justice system is racist at all. I mean, that's just crazy. Just crazy.
That is crazy, for crying out loud.
Yeah,
I mean, because
like one-third of all the black men in this country between the age of 18 and 30 are either in prison or on probation. You know, it's just ridiculous.
Well, it is ridiculous, and you know, I'm going to give you an example now. How far this thing? And one of the things I was going to bring up to you about like the federalizing of police.
Yeah.
It's okay. I'm going to give an example. I know of a friend of mine that was on a regular city street. Okay.
Yeah.
And he got pulled over by a college campus security officer. Because of his taillights.
I ran into one of them recently. Tried to give me a hard time. Go ahead. People get carried away with their authority. Go ahead.
Okay. Yep. Anyway, and he, you know, the reason was because the taillights were out because he has a switch that he didn't turn all the way on that turns his taillights on when he turns his headlights on. Anyway, he had told the officer, he told that security officer, hey, you know, yeah, because when the officer said, I smell alcohol. He says, yeah, I've had a couple drinks. He said, but it's been about 3 hours ago. He says, you know, and the guy, you know, took him out, made him do everything. He passed all the tests. He said, you got one more test to go. He said, let's turn around. And so my friend turned around and the cop or the security officer put his hands behind him and handcuffed him and took him to the sheriff's department, county jail. Didn't even gave him a breathalyzer test. The county, you know, even said, what's this all about, for crying out loud?
Right.
Anyway,
yep.
They kept him for only 2 hours.
Yep.
Okay. The county did because when they tested his breathalyzer, he was in this state. It's 0.8, I believe is how they call it.
Yeah.
He was 0.5.
Okay.
And they let him loose or let him out. Normally, if you've got a DUI anywhere, they're going to keep you 8 hours at least until you sober up. So my point is, how far is this authority going?
Right. It's every department has standards and procedures, and followed properly, they work well. But the cops get carried away. Look at this. You know, in Delaware, you can go to our website, by the way. There are a couple of articles under several categories under Take Action Now. There's a great article that explains your rights in any engagement or encounter with police. For example, you don't have to tell them squat. They can detain you for up to 2 hours if you refuse to give them your name and they have reasonable suspicion and so on and so forth. But it just covers everything from A to Z. The problem is the police don't act reasonably. Look at this encounter you mentioned it was a traffic ticket. These guys get carried away with their authority. The perfect example is this: the cop who, what was her name, Sandra, I forget her first name, the lady Bland, recently pulled over for the lane change, later died under certainly questionable circumstances in the local jail. Everybody's seen that video. You've seen that video, you know who I'm talking about, the young black lady. The guy says, "I'll light you up," tells her to put out her cigarette, demands she get out of the car. She failed to use her signal to change lanes in traffic. Give me a break. And this cop comes up with gun and badge, intimidating her, telling her to put out her cigarette. He has no authority to do that. She doesn't have to put out her cigarette. So demanding that she get out of the car. He can do that if he has reasonable grounds to fear for his safety, which he certainly didn't. And she's rightfully indignant. And what does he do? Slams her to the ground. We've seen it too many times. These people need to learn that they work for us. They need to control themselves, and when they get out of line, they need to be prosecuted. I can't say it enough times. Prosecuted. Go ahead.
I have to agree with you. And no, do I think people should be out breaking the law to hurt somebody, no, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? Neither do you or anybody else that I know of, unless they are a criminal and want to do it. But my point is, Ken, you are absolutely right. Yes, I did see the video, and I'm sure many of our listeners saw the video. Bottom line is, this is happening too often, too many times in this country.
That's right. And the answer to a lot of it, body cameras. You know, the camera doesn't lie. And in the one, San Diego? No, it's not San Diego. There's a town in California where they've had them in use for over a year. And the fact is that crime is down. It works fantastically. It improves the behavior on everybody's part, the police and the would-be offender, the civilian who's being encountered. You know, he doesn't want to act like a jackass and flare up on camera if he knows he's being filmed. It controls everybody to a much better extent. And they pay for themselves within a year or two. They pay for themselves in terms of reduced litigation coming from all of these abuse claims of abuse, the court costs, and the fantastic costs associated with claims of abuse when people have to file a lawsuit because there's no other recourse. I mean, the internal affairs, so-called internal affairs investigation, is a joke. Anybody can tell you that in most departments. Every now and then they'll do the right thing and say, okay, we did wrong, but by and large they don't. They cover it up. They don't want to hold each other accountable. Police officers are disciplined and punished and fired if they dare speak out against their fellow brothers in blue. There's several articles about that, notorious cases. Nobody wants to be a whistleblower. We need to encourage whistleblowers. We need to encourage proper behavior and the outing of the truth, wherever it may lead us, wherever it may be. We need to solve these problems.
Well, let me ask you this, Ken, because the fact that what you just said, that nobody, is this like a society? I mean, their own secret, like college group,
here's
sorority?
Part of the problem. Let me throw this fact out there. I got it from a New York Times article. I can't cite it to you, but for every, you mentioned the guy arrested him, put this guy, your friend you talked about, put him in a police car, put him to the local jail. For every one person arrested, 29 people benefit financially. Think about it. The cops, the prison officials, the guys at the jail, the prosecutor, the judges, and when you get into the prisons, the service providers, the whole nine yards. So there's a huge, huge industry. There are a lot of people who are making money by the out-of-control criminal justice system that we have and that we've seen for about the last 40 years since we decided that the war on drugs was a good idea. Somebody did. Found out in a hurry it's not. 29 people are benefiting financially. The sad fact is that a handful of them might be benefiting society. I mean, it's wasted money. But they have a vested interest in opposing changes, in doing the right thing, in locking up fewer people, and even taking them as far as the local jail. Got to keep these jailers employed, So there's tremendous financial resistance. And some of it is conscious, some of it is subconscious. We talk about cops who do the right thing. A lot of them are inadvertently doing the wrong thing. For example, they're enforcing the laws. Some of the laws just need to be changed, and we're seeing that very quickly and very graphically with the war on drugs, primarily with marijuana in the states that have legalized it. Portugal is you don't want to get me into the war on drugs, but the fact is that evidence already shows we've been headed down the wrong path, and the right path is coming, and we're already started on it slowly but surely. But you have these officers. I'm a member of the Speaker's Bureau of LEAP, Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. They've been around for over 10 years. They're in over 100 countries. It's over 200,000 former cops and prosecutors like me, or current ones, and other people, who see that drugs are bad, but the war on drugs is worse. So, and any police officer can tell you, you know, they're spinning their wheels. The six guys they sweep off the street corner in the middle of the night, they're replaced before the sun comes up. They're doing nothing to protect society, but they're making money. They're keeping themselves employed, and the system goes on and on and on, and it makes no sense. It's insanity. You know the old definition of insanity. I think Einstein's the one. There goes my other phone. Sorry. Einstein was saying that, you know, insanity is doing the same thing over and over and over and expecting a different result. Well, we've been doing this approach to crime and the war on drugs for 40 years now. It's accomplishing nothing. It does nothing to stem the flow of drugs. I can get anything I want in 20 minutes in any town in this country, never having been there before. It's a cinch. And it's just ludicrous, but it's keeping a lot of people employed. We should divert that money, legalize drugs, put a small fraction of what we're wasting now into advertising the dangers of drugs as we legalize, tax, and regulate them, and use that money to fix our crumbling infrastructure. I saw a report on the news the other day, the number of highways and bridges in this country that are crumbling and railroad tracks is astonishing. You know, that's where we should be focusing our energy, things like that, building more hospitals, building more housing for the homeless, taking care of our elderly population like me, growing old rapidly, you know, doing things that matter, doing things productive, instead of locking up 2.3 million people. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, that's right. I was just going to ask you two quick questions because you just hit on two. You've been hitting on hard, and that was going to be part of my question, and you've really kind of helped me out here, and that is this idea of if that ever comes to federalizing police, let me put it that way. I said if. Do you think because the communities, the cities, and the counties, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, it's because of the money that they're going to get for federalizing the police, number one? And number two, when you talked about legalizing, you know, the drugs that people shouldn't be sitting in jail for, I'm going to give you an example. Medical marijuana. That's just one example.
There is no doubt that it has tremendous medicinal value. Yep.
And, you know, to me, there's so many people that need medical marijuana. I don't care what age, if they are, you know, you have young children that if it's helped them, for crying out loud, who've got cancer.
Yeah, or epilepsy. It prevents them from having seizures. 23 states now, if I'm not mistaken, have medical marijuana to one point, at one degree. It's the future, and it's coming, and every state will. And as sure as I'm sitting here, I dare say, within 5 years, California will be the next to legalize marijuana. And within 5 years, every state will, because what we're doing now is a tremendous waste of your tax dollars. You know, we think about how we spend our money, except when it comes to paying taxes. We just pay the taxes. We should think about it a little more, because we're totally wasting money with the war on drugs. We've turned it into a revenue source. You read the numbers. The experiment is over. In Colorado and Oregon, Washington State is next. They're making money hand over fist, tens of millions of dollars to enhance, you know, going into the coffers, to the budget, et cetera, et cetera.
Yep. Well, you know, the sad part about this whole thing, Ken, like what you're talking about, sad part is that so many people, you know, I mean, it's obvious. Let's face it. How many deaths are caused by marijuana? I'm using this for an example, compared to any other drug or substance, whatever you want to call it, out there, especially alcohol, which is legal.
Alcohol is the worst drug any way you look at it, in terms of lives destroyed, dollars wasted in the accidents and insurance and deaths and families destroyed, alcoholism. It's the worst drug any way you look at it. That's correct. Marijuana never killed anybody. But we need to have regularization, responsible. Listen, the war on drugs is quite simple. We can handle, it's over $300 billion industry in this country, second only to Walmart, the illegal drug business. Now, do you want it controlled by drug kingpins, drug lords, a bunch of hoodlums with the whirlpool of crime swirling all around it with no quality control? You never know what you're getting. all of that sort of crap, or do you want it legalized, regulated, and taxed? Regulation means responsible people making responsible decisions. Well, we've been doing the former for 30 years, and we've seen the consequences. We need to do the latter, have legalized, regulated, and taxed. You know, kids aren't getting pot in the Colorado or Washington or Oregon or Washington, D.C. You can't get it unless you're over 21.
I don't mean to interrupt you, but I'm somehow or another we're having a hearing problem on our end. I don't know about if the engineer's got the same issue with you with your phone, but we're going to keep – we don't want to lose you, so please stay with us, okay? Because every once in a while you're good, and then all of a sudden it fades away, and it could be the phone. I'm not sure what it is because, listen, when it comes to technology, anything is possible, and I think you are aware of that. I want to give out our number real quick because we're this show is going by fast and we only got maybe, 15 minutes or so, but, the number is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. Kenneth Abraham is our guest. He's with the Citizens for Criminal Justice. I'm not going to call him just an activist. I'm going to tell you something. He's an expert in what he's talking about. This is part one of federalizing police. Part two will be in 2 weeks, and I believe that's actually July 9th. I mean, August 9th. But anyway, and Ken, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you. But, you've hit on some very, very strong.
Well, I did hope you'll have me back to cover these more extensively sometime, but you will never see the federalization of police. The local authorities won't permit it. The public won't permit it. And it makes no sense. And we've already seen the pushback against it in the militarization, with the Army and other branches of the military giving away all this military equipment and so forth. We've seen that that's not a great idea. And we're curbing that back, or President Obama has set certain standards whereby they can't accept these things. And so we won't see it in terms of a national police force. But I'm not thinking whether it's feasible or possible to have national training standards for police in all police departments. That might not be a bad idea, things like that.
Well, I think what you're saying is, look, we can't have chaos in the streets to begin with. So therefore, we have had police for how many years? I mean, since the beginning of time, in a sense. But what we have to do is get them into a training program that allows them to actually, like you said, don't be profiling a young black man because he's a young black man. I'm using that as an example. Number two, you hit on something that really, really kind of made sense here. You're saying that it won't be federalized or of any kind of city, county, or whatever.
Yeah, we won't have a national police force.
Yeah, and that's because I did bring up the funding. Would this be a situation where it had to do with money, where the cities and the counties and states or whatever are saying, hey, look, we'd rather have the federal money as kind of a payoff thing. This goes on as lobbyists
That's something we need to be cautious about, for sure. Yep. But you need a little better education of the police. I've seen a couple of videos of cops saying, ask the Constitution. What are you talking about, your constitutional rights? Let me tell you, as an attorney, I was at my junior year of law school is where I first encountered, really. I mean, I memorized the amendments in the eighth grade and that sort of stuff, but really didn't know what they meant. But there was a book on constitutional law when I was junior in college, which prompted me to start thinking I might want to go to law school. The Constitution, these are our basic rights, the right of free speech, the right of freedom to express ourselves, freedom of assembly, freedom from unreasonable search and seizure. These principles are invaluable. They are what make this country the greatest country in the world, and I still think it is. And the police need to develop a little more respect for it and understanding of it. When someone evokes a principle of the Constitution or an amendment, they're not, calling on some alien charter from outer space. They're evoking a basic principle of American freedom that protects everybody, including the police officer, the citizen, everybody in this country. And it's very, very important. It's nothing to minimize and scoff and say, well, screw the Constitution. I don't care about your constitutional rights. They need to learn what constitutional rights are, and they need to learn their limits in abridging them. Sorry.
Okay, let me ask you this real quick. Because I have heard and seen some issues where now there are some police who have said if somebody else is using their, let's say their car phone or what do you want to call it, mobile phone to videotape or to video what's going on
that'll never pass muster. You have the absolute right to film police in public unless you're interfering with the police performance of their duty. And any towns, cities, or states that try to pass laws to the contrary, you wait and see when that'll be litigated up to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court, as sure as I'm sitting here, will rule those laws are unconstitutional because people have the right to do that.
Well, you know, I would hope that would happen.
I sort of anticipated your question. Yeah.
No. You did answer my question, but here's my concern. The way the Supreme Court's going today, you can't tell which way they're going to go on anything anymore.
Yeah, well, I know. Don't get me started on that either. But generally, they've had some terrible decisions, most of them 5-4, and they are hard to predict. But, you know, our system isn't perfect, but it's the best in the world. And prior to the war on drugs, it worked damn well. I am telling you, so well. But today, everything is so rushed, so hurried, due to the overload in cases generated by the war on drugs. That's the bottom line. Nobody has time to do things right. The judges, the prosecutors, the defendants, the defense attorneys, the police in investigating. It's just a royal disaster. May I take a minute to read this quote?
Yes.
Which expresses much better what I tried to say a minute ago. And I stumbled into this when I was in prison doing research from before the sun came up till after the sun went down. Every day of the week for 4 years when they had me in that isolation cell for no reason and unlawfully in prison to try and shut me up. I stumbled on this quote, and it says prisoners, but it applies to anybody. Prisoners are persons who most of us would rather not think about, banished from everyday sight. They exist in a shadow world that only dimly enters our awareness. When prisoners, and here's the part that does apply to anyone, when prisoners emerge from the shadows to press a constitutional claim, they invoke no alien set of principles drawn from a distant culture. Rather, they speak the charter upon which all of us rely to hold official power accountable. Hold official power accountable. That's right. And I added, you know, official power must be held accountable, especially when it's exercised in the shadows and not in the daylight. But anyway, I think that says it pretty well.
Ken, that's some powerful words.
Yeah.
It truly is. And I'm going to say this, and I don't know what your opinion is on this, but in my opinion, our prisons are so full of people that have no business being in there anyway because of it's a nonviolent crime.
I'm serious. You know, I'm a former prosecutor. I still have a prosecutor mentality in that, you know, if you rape somebody or you seriously injure them, you mug them, you commit an armed robbery, murder, burglary, the theft of property, depending on the theft, maybe you should or shouldn't do time. But if you do the crime, you do the time. But our prisons are full of drug users, nonviolent drug offenders and dealing drugs, mentally ill people, people, DUIs, you know, they beat prisoners to death in there. They're getting away with murder, never mind all the minor stuff, murdering people. There's a guy in Delaware named Ronald Shute, was beaten to death in the local prison, Sussex County. The death certificate says, homicide at the hands of DOC staff. The cause of death, blunt force trauma. I saw it many times when I was in there. The goon squad, rapid response team, because the guy objected to the food or something, they rush in, they beat him to death. He was in jail for DUI. He's an ordinary citizen. Could be your aunt. Hey, the point is, people have the misguided notion that everybody in prison is an axe-wielding child molester. They're not. It could be your niece or nephew in there for having a joint in their pocket. It could be your cousin getting arrested for DUI. Lord knows, when I was younger, I could have been arrested and convicted of DUI 100 times. You know, too much to drink on a Friday night.
Well, this is the thing. This is what I'm trying to say, Ken. Again, I'm losing you in my headset, but I've got my volume turned up far enough where I think I can get what you're saying. But here's my question to you. Because this is an issue that probably, I don't know what the percentage is of those that are in prison right now for, like you said, nonviolent
crime. Depending on what article you read, it's easily 25% and as high as 40%. No doubt about it. That's a lot. Sure, we're talking about a total population of 2.3 million, down to about 2.2 these days. Do the math.
That's about the size of Chicago, I think, isn't it? About 2.5 million?
It's because there's, for every one person arrested, 29 benefit financially. It's so bad. You remember those two family court judges in Pennsylvania? Thank God they finally got caught, and they got sentenced to time. They were sentencing juveniles. I mean, everybody in court was flabbergasted. The parents, the defense attorneys, these kids come in. Norm, it could be your boy, your daughter. With a, no criminal record, they got busted for loitering or trespassing. Or truancy at school or whatever, they send them to prison, the private prison, because they're getting kickbacks from the people who own the prison. Two of them, two family court judges.
It's going back to the money. It's going back to the money.
Let me
before we get to the point where we run out of time, sorry. I want to ask you a question, because I'm sure our listeners, you know, I know why they don't call in. Because I get comments constantly. They're so intrigued with what our guests have to say, and different than anybody else. You are very, very interesting and smart on what you're talking about. Let me ask you this real serious question.
I
understand you did go to prison. You said so.
Go ahead. Yeah.
Is there a possibility that you can ever get this overturned, where you can get your license to be a lawyer back?
Oh, no, I resigned from the bar before I got in trouble. I got in trouble with the cocaine about 8 years ago. I went to practice law for 10 years, then I went to Florida and went into business. And along the way, I decided if I ever wanted to set the world on fire again, it would be business, not law. So I resigned from the bar. I might have been disbarred. I'd like to think not. First offense. I had nothing to do with practicing law, my crime. And I did commit a crime, no doubt about it. But I have no desire to practice full time. Thanks anyway. I thought about it the other day. A friend said, "Well, gosh, you could make a lot of money. You're constantly broke and complaining about money, and that's true. But that's okay. I'm doing what I want to do. I'm helping a lot of people. You know, why don't you take the bar exam? Why don't you get your license back or whatever?" Nobody seems to. So I did inquire. Nobody knew how to do it after you resigned, whether you could just apply for reinstatement or you have to take the bar exam again. But I have no desire to practice law full time. I've done that before. Thank you very much. I'm doing what I want to do. Did I answer your question?
All right, well, let me jump in again, because I kind of, you faded out on me, but I got quite a bit of what you said. I don't know if our audience did, but anyway, the fact that you did resign prior to going to prison from the Bar Association, and you've gone into other business, which I think is very commendable. And we've got 2 minutes left, so Ken, I tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to give your website out. Number one, it is Criminals for Justice, or excuse me, Citizens for Criminal Justice .net. Is that correct?
Yep. net, correct.
Okay. Yep. Now, secondly, Ken, and because we are having a hard time hearing you for some whatever reason, which is it's technology as far as I'm concerned. I do want you on a show again, please. And as soon as we can get together to do it at your convenience, because I want to do about Citizens for Criminal Justice. I think our audience needs to know about this. And
okay.
They can go to your website, or they can actually go to Ken Abraham, and actually get to the Citizens for Criminal Justice site.
Yep.
And I just want to say that, Ken, I can't thank you enough for being on the show. You've done fantastic.
Thank you.
You're a great guest. I'm just sorry that we have this little technical difficulty. But, you know, I hope that you will agree to come on at our earliest convenience, or your earliest convenience, so we can do a show on Citizens for Criminal Justice. Would that be okay with you?
Well, sure, thanks. I've got to call into my computer guy about Skype. I don't know how to do it, but we'll get that hook rigged up. Okay, thank you. Yep. Thanks
okay,
very much.
And Ken, I'll tell you what you do. Give me an email or message me, whatever you want to do, and let me know when you're available. We'll figure out something, okay? And I've got 30 seconds left. So, ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank our guest, Kenneth Abraham. He's been a great guest. My name's Neil Douglas. This is American Truth Finders. And I apologize for any technical difficulties. However, our next show is, I definitely think it is August or July. Yeah, August 9th it is. And it'll be Federal Policing Part 2. And my plans is Ray Kirkus as being our guest. In the meantime, take care. God bless everyone. Have a wonderful evening and a wonderful week and 2 weeks ahead of you. Good night, everyone.